This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I am so excited. We've got the executive producer and writer for Family Guy.
For Family Guy, this is a very popular TV show everyone's probably heard of.
Yes.
But we are talking scripts and all sorts of things with Mark Henteman on the show today.
Right.
But we're mainly talking about his $90 million in holding. And what's so exciting... in holdings, I should say. But so what's so exciting about
in
Mark,
LA.
In LA and yeah. a little bit in Austin, it sounds like.
Right.
But what's really exciting about Mark Henteman is he kind of fell into this, right? Like he was a struggling artist in New York City who was having trouble, you know,
keeping
the lights on.
He was writing for The Tonight Show. The Late Show with David Letterman.
Right. Yeah. But even before that, he tells a story. So we'll let him tell it. But
it's a fascinating struggling story.
From struggling artist to successful artist, but a successful artist with a massive real estate portfolio.
Right.
This is a very interesting show. And one thing that we mentioned last week that I've been thinking a lot about, Mark Henteman is one of these guys that clearly charts a path that I think anyone could probably do with a lot of discipline. But over the course of this conversation, you clearly get a sense that Mark is a fairly exceptional guy.
He is very exceptional, but he has a way of kind of making his information very accessible, right? And his trajectory is he's not necessarily a numbers guy. He's not a guy who grew up with financial literacy the way that a lot of our guests grew up, right? He's kind of one of these guys that he's an artist.
Yeah.
He's an artist.
You know what I would say? To be a writer...
You have to be disciplined.
You have to be disciplined. That's the thing, right? So I think you take that discipline of every day carving out time to sit down and do what you need to do to get things done.
Right.
And I think he's probably used that discipline in real estate to very successful ends.
It's like my fitness regimen.
Yeah. Yeah. Your fitness regimen. Speaking of Peter Griffin, you were showing me right before I went live.
Wait, am I Peter Griffin? Is that why we're...
Well, hey, all I got to say is you went to what, body comp?
Oh,
I didn't. I've never even heard of this.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. So here, well, I'll give you the Coles notes here. But we basically, hey, Cal, guy on our team, and I were chirping each other's bodies, just typical.
As you would.
As you would every morning over coffee. He's 10 years younger than me. He's in better shape than me. But we both decided we're going to take 12 weeks, a little bit of a competition, to change to change our physique.
Speaking of changing trajectories, okay.
Yeah. Coming out of this coming out of COVID, feeling a little bit better about
So instead of hopping on a scale, you guys go to body comps.
No, so we couldn't, like, it's tough to do because when you're competing with someone, what do you do? It's like we can't just do weight loss because I've got more weight to lose.
You're both fairly thick.
Yeah, but anyways, long story short, we were like, here's
just small bodies though.
Thick, T-H-I-C-C, right? We both decided that we were going to go to this body comp .ca, which is, it actually measures, so they measure not only your fat, but like your bone density, and it's some kind of like...
Do they do muscle?
Yeah. Turns out I got some of them too. But I had a lot of fat.
And what struck me was you just showed me, you were walking me through it.
The report. I think you should do it.
Yeah, trying to sell me on it. And we got to, there's like four...
Examples.
Four examples of bodies...
Regular humans.
And then you flipped the page to what looks like a donut.
Yeah, it was okay. I don't know if it looks like a donut. More like a pie chart with that was my body. Yeah. And the worst part is that, like, when you see your because the way they
but
do it.
But it was pretty small. Like the full
the body?
No, like the body on the page was fairly small. But when you're in the room, you brought it up on the big screen.
He brought it up on the big screen. Like, it's like you and a guy. Like, that's the only thing about it. He's got some good bedside manner, and he's a really, really nice guy, really into the data. But when you're sitting there, just two men that just met each other going over your body on the big screen, it is, man, you want to come out motivated if you have any concerns about
it. Well, I think he shrunk it. It's like when you take on Photoshop, you mess with the image, and it looks all out of whack.
It was almost like it was I think a portrait photo, and then he turned it into like one of those Instagram square. Yeah, almost a landscape. But anyways, I think objects on the screen looked fatter than they appear in real life. But it was very depressing. And so what I've come out of this, but this is the last thing I'll say about it because it's really bad. But
I'm glad I brought it up for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that's really humbling is you see your bones, and then you see kind of like the muscle, and then you see the fat, and it's almost like overlaid over top. And man, I'm actually a small guy.
Turns out,
I'm actually. Like, bone structure wise, I'm in fantastic shape. It
turns out you're like dainty.
Well, no, I know. I'm a dainty fella. But Peter was like, so this is like your muscle and everything else. And I was like, wow, like it's crazy. It was like, it's like a normal sized person.
It's like the John Prine song, Hello in There.
Yeah, exactly. It's it just looked like it looked like me standing in a shadow, like a normal sized man standing in a shadow, or a puddle. The way you would draw a puddle around. Anyways, bodycomp.ca. Yeah. Shout out to Peter. I'm gonna see.
That's
him.
It's not a paid sponsorship.
No, it's not. He's awesome though. I think he's super. He's booked up quite a ways away, but I think he's always looking for people to come and see him. But anyways, we've got, you know what, before we get to our show too, I'm back in 12 weeks. I will be posting it in notes.
We'll have an update.
A photo of the after photo all.
But speaking of paid sponsorships.
Yes, OakwindRealty.com.
Oakwind.com. This is our brokerage. Best brokerage in the city, bar none. If you're a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody looking to make a change.
A seasoned
who's been
agent
in the business for some time, oakwind.com/join. Type in VRP 2020. That's oakwind.com/join. Type in VRP 2020. There's a huge incentive.
Yes.
But I think the real incentive is to sit down with some of the best and brightest in the business and learn more about Oakwind.
It is the best brokerage out there. If you're looking to make a change, definitely head over to oakwind.com/join. VRP 2020. What else, Matt?
Last thing before we get to a phenomenal conversation with Mark Henteman, we have the Sellers Club.
Yes.
This is our new club.
This is a new club. It's a hot club in town.
It's one of the hottest.
One of the hottest clubs in town. It is a basically where sellers can get the absolute best resources to get top dollar for your home in the shortest amount of time. And that always takes, as we say on this program, planning. It reminds me of that Abe Lincoln quote. What is it? If I, uh, if somebody gave me 4 hours to cut down a tree, I'd spend the first 3 hours sharpening the axe. So this is really what that is. It's a sharpening the axe guide.
That's right. A step-by-step process to get your home ready to list and get top dollar.
It's
exciting. Avoid any sort of objections. You need this list. You want this list. It's an exclusive club, but it's growing quick. Sign up at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And the way to do that, Matt, is just send us an email with Sellers Club in the subject line. We'll get you a copy of Volume 1. There's going to be several volumes this to this.
Yeah, it's like an encyclopedia.
It is. It is. That's why we don't know how to use it. All right. Well, without further ado, let's cut to our interview with executive producer of Family Guy and real estate investor, Quantum Capital Inc., $90 million in Los Angeles, currently held. Unbelievable.
Mark Henneman, this is a great conversation, so enjoy.
Enjoy. Okay, so we're here with Mark Henteman. He is the writer and executive producer for Family Guy, and he's also the founder of Quantum Capital Incorporated, currently with around $90 million of holdings in Los Angeles, which is really exciting. So welcome, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mark, for taking the time today. Maybe can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a writer and producer, as you just introduced me. I've been in the entertainment business, gosh, I think like since 1997. I'm from Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. I always wanted to be a writer and moved to New York after college and struggled a lot there. You know, obviously maybe it wasn't the smartest thing to move into one of the most expensive cities right out of school when I had no money and had debt. So it was kind of traumatizing trying to make ends meet there, but I was still passionate about writing, trying to learn, you know, how stories work and comedy works and why it works when it works and why it's bad when it's bad. I was waking up in the middle of the night, panicked over how I was going to pay my rent. And it took me a while, like it takes everyone a while to break in, but I got hired to write for David Letterman in New York. Then I moved out to LA where I joined a new show just starting up called Family Guy. And when I got my first script payments for Family Guy, when it was just starting up, you know, the trauma of my destitute days in New York were still fresh. And I didn't have much trust that I would be able to make a career in entertainment. I thought I'd be unemployed for a lot of my career. And I thought I'd be spit out of the business. I don't know, I could be spit out at any time. So I took my first couple script payments, which was about maybe $20,000 a script, and I invested in a duplex. I got a little nudge to do that from a broker who I had met, who was telling me, you know, don't put your money towards rent when you could be putting it towards a mortgage. And I was like, are you kidding me? You think I want a mortgage, the responsibility of a mortgage? Like, as far as I know, I'm going to be unemployed in 2 weeks from now, and I won't be working again for a year and a half. But she convinced me, and she showed me a property because I told her I don't want anything cute. Don't show me any charming houses. I want something rough. That's basically all I want this thing to do is give me financial security, give me a cushion, something that I could fix up and that will be like a great investment. And to her credit, she found me this, you know, ugly duckling duplex, but it was in a great area and it was 1920s and it needed a lot of work, but it had great bones. It had great architecture that I decided to jump in, and it was pretty terrifying because I didn't know what I was doing, but I did it. And I figured it out as I went along, and I fixed up this duplex. And it turned out to be pretty remarkable experience. I didn't have any training going in, but I tried to embrace it. My tenant was Mike Henry, who does the voice of Cleveland and Herbert in Consuela, if anyone watches the show. And, you know, he made fun of me for being a landlord, and I threatened to evict him pretty much every week. But I read everything I could about real estate and embraced it. And it turned out to be a phenomenal investment, you know, not knowing what I was doing. And I sold it for probably about 3 times what I bought it for. I had leveraged it, you know, with a 10% down payment for a first time buyer. And, you know, my return ended up being like 2,000%. I think I made $800,000 gain on a $43,000 down payment. And from that point forward, I was just blown away. I was like, real estate, this is the thing. This is the thing that I have to do if I'm going to stay in this business. And I was passionate about it and I enjoyed it. And so I've been doing it ever since and kind of buying, you know, I was buying aggressively through the early 2000s, I guess aggressively for me, but every time I made money off of scripts and shows and whatnot, I no longer wanted a fancy car or anything. I just wanted to pump everything in real estate.
The thought I have is, I wouldn't say we came up in the same type of creative field as yourself, but growing up, I feel like Adam and I both hung out with people that, yeah, it was like real estate wasn't on anyone's radar, presumably with your tenant there, who's a voice actor. It wasn't on a lot of people's radar who you were working with and spending time with. Do you think being like a creative person has helped you in your real estate journey?
I think so. Yes. I mean, real estate, it feels like it's shifting to a different part of my brain, but, I was a bit of an artist too. My first job I ever got was a greeting card illustrator and writer. I think I can visualize the potential in rough properties or distressed properties. So I think it helps with my value add. And I just enjoyed the shift from spending all day in my head and kind of in the world of abstract ideas. And I enjoyed shifting when I got home, like, okay, this is concrete. I could see it. It, you know, has a foundation, you know, it's there. Whereas you second guess yourself all the time as a writer. But yeah, to your point, I didn't know anybody who invested in real estate. It was totally off my radar until I was into it.
Can we talk, Mark, a little bit about, first of all, maybe what you're buying, and are you buying a mix of property types, or do you have a particular property that you're investing in?
Well, what's interesting is you mentioned, you know, that we both are fans of Bigger Pockets and started listening to that. And I started listening to them maybe in like 2013, 2014. And I have been investing since 2000. And I was in Los Angeles. So all I knew was I had limited funds and I wanted to buy multifamily properties. So I bought the cheapest properties I could find and combined with the best neighborhoods. That was what kind of brought me success with my first deal, sort of inadvertently, but I also kind of knew what an up and coming neighborhood looked like back then. But that became my formula. And I was trying to target buying a property in Los Angeles for about $200 to $250 a square foot. And what that, the product that drew me to was 1920s construction. And so I was buying those in good areas. And then I started listening to Bigger Pockets and everyone was saying, you know, don't ever buy anything pre-1980s. And I had been doing that for 12 or 14 years at that point and had nothing but success. So I carved out my own strategy that made sense for me. And it was a great strategy. I was buying these buildings pretty much at about half of their replacement cost. In Los Angeles, as you probably have heard, it's very restrictive. There's the building codes, the regulations, and the permitting is all expensive. So it's a high barrier to entry market. And I was a bottom feeder, but I was buying the cheapest buildings I could find and I would fix them up. I, you know, big value adds. And I loved bringing out the historic architecture in those buildings. I've always been a fan of historic properties and, you know, the way they were built back then. So it was kind of a passion for me. And I also tried to bring out a little bit of the Hollywood character. You know, I'm not from Hollywood or LA, came from Ohio. So when I was buying these big buildings, and some of them had these like castle like features to them that I thought was cool, I would, you know, do the lobby with these black and white vintage photographs of historic Hollywood and historic LA architecture, and really bring out that character. And often I'd be tearing up like a 1980s bad linoleum floor. So it was pretty dramatic. You could pretty dramatically change these things, and the tenants loved them. And, you know, it was a great formula for me. And that's kind of what it was. If I answered your question adequately.
Yeah. And were you, are you doing this work yourself, Mark, or are you kind of visualizing, what the building could potentially look like, and you have a team, a solid team around you?
Yes. At this point, I have got a very solid team around me. In the beginning, yeah, I still had a team. I knew that I could never do self-management because I was working a lot on the writing side. So I was looking for good management companies, and I have long relationships with a couple management companies, pretty much one at this point. And then I also found the team around them. I had an insurance agent that I went to all the time. I had a loan broker that I went to all the time, and I've now done probably 60 to 70 loans with. Yeah, I had my team. I had my unit turn guys. I started to, when I built a big enough portfolio, I went outside the management company and would do turns myself because I could do them cheaper and I could do them faster and cheaper and get more of what I wanted. So I had my go-to guys when a unit would turn, I just call them and say, hey, go over there and could you do our thing? So yes, team was important.
And it sounds like your strategy has been somewhat unique in terms of the people we've talked to. It doesn't sound like you're looking for cookie cutter product at all. It sounds like you're looking for kind of more unique buildings, if I understand correctly.
Yes. And I think I more target the area, the location, than I do the property itself. I think that's where I start. I usually start by searching like, okay, here's, I'm in LA. LA has probably 80 submarkets to it. It's a big, you know, sprawling city, and there's really hot areas there. You know, there's Santa Monica, there's Beverly Hills, Bel Air, and all that stuff. And then there's all these transitioning areas. And one of the two of the big things that I've taken advantage of in LA is when I got here, Hollywood was a dump. It was where you'd find drug dealers and prostitutes, and in real disrepair. And then also downtown LA was, you know, basically Skid Row. It was like a ghost town. And it, coincidentally, when I got out here, there were major pushes to renovate and revive Hollywood and also downtown. And there was a lot of economic incentives to do so. And there was these like coalitions of major businesses that had agreed to sink like $5 billion into both of those areas. And it was matched by like city and government funds. So I knew those two areas were going to explode. And that's where I was living, kind of in that general area. So I was always looking for, all right, where is the most, and you saw all the hipsters and young people moving there, professionals, they all wanted to be there. And so I looked for those hot neighborhoods. And then the ones that were hot and had gotten priced up, I looked in the periphery of those, that area, so I can get the, you know, the lower priced property acquisitions that I knew, you know, as people got priced out of the really prime markets, they'd want to live as close as possible. And I would be, you know, I'd be there ahead of them buying stuff and fixing it up.
That's really sound advice. And we've talked a lot about that on our show, kind of looking for the next area and follow the hipsters and drug dealers and prostitutes.
And writers.
And writers. the ones working their way to success, I guess. Yeah, so I kind of want to unpack that a little bit. So first of all, I guess in terms of your strategy, are you renovating and holding these properties then? Because, I mean, you do have around $90 million in holdings right now in the LA area. So are these, do they become revenue properties, or are you putting them back out onto the market?
I put them back out on the market. From day one, when I was sitting in that duplex with Mike Henry, I was always looking across the street at the fourplex and thinking like, God, it would be so nice to have four units, because that way if one goes vacant, I got three others. And then next to that was like a six unit. And I'd be like, oh, it'd be even better to have a six unit. So I was a big believer in economies of scale from day one. So for the first, say, 8 years of my investing, my sort of roadmap was to get in with the funds that I have. And I didn't use investors back then. I was using all my own money. I would get into these properties, fix them up, sell them, and go into a larger number, 1031 exchange into larger scale. And I think I was doing that consistently. I think I went from our duplex to a 14 unit that I fixed up. And, you know, I consistently did that. And I was usually able to go from, I think my biggest trade up was I went from a four unit building at Sunset and Vine in kind of prime Hollywood to 36 units in Koreatown, which was not far away, which was that next, you know, that next transitioning area. And so I liked that model. And I always kind of thought in the back of my head that once I get above 50 units or so, per building, maybe I'll settle down and I'll hold these things long term. But, you know, I've now been at it 20 years and I have 80 units and 70 units and 60 units. And some of them are in Austin, Texas, because I also diversified into Austin. But I'm still looking to trade those. I'm looking to buy, renovate within the first 2 or 3 years, by year three, refinance, and maybe hold it for a couple more years and then sell after between years 5 and 7. It just seems like that makes my money, my investment dollars work hardest, because I'm adding the most money when I'm actively renovating them. And once I complete the renovation and it's stabilized, you know, I've kind of done what I need to do and I don't need the money. You know, I'm lucky. Luckily, amazingly, I've stayed consistently employed in the entertainment business and it's fun for me. So my real estate is all just like working my investment dollars. And so that's why I do that.
This reminds me of Vancouver in a lot of ways that, you know, when you think back over the last 15, 20 years, it's like, wow, there were so many opportunities. But it always feels like looking forward, it's like, okay, where are the, you know, is there anything left? Do you see, like, right. how do you go about choosing markets today, and where do you see the opportunities? And like, are there still opportunities in LA that you're looking at, up and coming neighborhoods, or is that the reason why you moved to Austin? Or
and are you still buying right now?
Great questions. So I think there are opportunities in LA. And I think one of the reasons that there are opportunities, and I think that there will always be opportunities in LA, is that, and I think this is a stat from 1916. I haven't updated this. I should look again. But in 2016, there was 3 million parcels in LA County. And so there's 3 million properties. And there was just so much inventory that at any given time, if you take 3 million properties, I don't know, maybe there's 4% of those are on the market, if that's a reasonable thing to guess. And that's like, that's still in the hundreds of thousands of properties that are available. And because you have such a wide range of age of properties, and, you know, it's a principle that applies to real estate all over, not just LA, but as an investor, you're kind of a venture capitalist, especially if you're a value add investor. you're looking to buy these businesses, and that's what real estate is, that you can improve dramatically. And in real estate, we have a advantage over other venture capitalists because most venture capitalists outside of real estate are buying professionally run businesses. Whereas real estate, you've got mom and pop owners, you've got dentists and doctors and all kinds of people that are that own these things and haven't maximized the value and don't really actively manage them. So there's, I think there's tons of opportunity in LA, but I did want to diversify. After I had a portfolio of 20 some properties in LA, I knew I wanted a second market. LA has earthquakes. You know, I hadn't gotten hit by one and, you know, I think I'm okay, but I did want to diversify my portfolio. So I spent probably 2 or 3 years looking at other markets, looking at population growth, job growth. I wanted a tech city. I wanted, you know, wage and income growth. I wanted a diverse economy, and I wanted barriers to entry because barriers to entry was one of the main drivers of appreciation in LA. And I zeroed in on a couple locations. One of them was Salt Lake City. I had a couple others, but I ended up in Austin, and I like Austin a lot. And so I moved there, and I now have about 200 units there. And I really like the drivers that underlie that market. And that's, it's been really interesting and fascinating to me to move to a new market. And, you know, I think it's going to be fruitful because I picked a market that, you know, there's still jobs pouring into that city. And, you know, as well as new residents, I think there's people moving there at some kind of really startling figure every day.
Right. I'm curious, how did you go? Because like one of the challenges for a lot of people looking in other markets is learning that market and feeling like they have a good handle. And then also it's an overwhelming process of kind of looking across, especially the U.S., at so many markets. Like how did you even just start approaching the idea of another market?
Sure. I figured out like what I wanted to look for and did research on that. And, you know, based on my experience, but also, you know, I kind of looked at all the data and yeah, that narrowed it down to a few markets. And ironically, I was looking also on like, could I just Google, you know, what are the best multifamily markets in 2016 when I was starting to look? And strangely, every list of the top 10 markets were different. And there was not a ton of overlap, but a lot of them had, you know, Austin was appearing on a lot of them. Salt Lake City was on a lot of them and others, Boise, Idaho, the Florida, the Southeast, Charlotte, Nashville. But yeah, so I wanted something that was close by. I guess that was another part of my criteria in a second market was had to be someplace I could get to easily. And you're right when you say it's tough to and daunting to try to invest in a new market far away. And I was talking to brokers in multiple cities, but a lot of them in Austin. I was getting to know all the professionals there, and I had been there once or twice and still kind of dragging my feet. I was still a little hesitant. But what happened is someone reached out to me just to pick my brain, and I usually kind of try to accommodate them if that happens. And I was talking to this guy and he seemed very motivated. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, where are you, by the way? And he's like, I'm in Austin. I was like, oh, you know, I happen to be interested in the Austin market. So if you want to stay in touch, you know, please do. And if you find something that, you know, maybe I'd be willing to go in on it for you. And that started a partnership, and his name is Nick. And he and I, you know, he's become one of my partners on Quantum Capital, and, you know, he's on the ground in Austin, and that gave me the confidence, and he's lived there. So he knew street by street, he knew pocket by pocket. And we started making a map of Austin. It's like, all right, here's where we want to go. Let's know all the brokers and all the players and start networking and ask them to give us deals.
So one thing, Mark, that seems to be in your life, it seems like you're very busy, right? Like you're writing on on Family Guy. You're writing, I think we were not live when you said you're currently writing a script. You're in, you know, you're running Quantum. How do you stay on top of a market? Like, where do you find the time and what are your strategies for staying on top of, I guess, at least two markets here?
Yes. It's hard. I am very busy. Sometimes I feel like I'm too busy and then I kind of be like, no, I can handle this. And it's having good systems, having a good team is a big part of it that I learn more and more. But I wake up, you know, in the morning and I start reading, you know, I read the National Real Estate Investor daily. And, you know, I kind of try to consume economic information. Especially now during COVID, just trying to digest and understand. To your question, markets and what's happening in the rental economy and in the greater economy. And that's how I do it. Is I'm just always trying to stay on top of where jobs are happening, what's happening with employment, what's happening with rents. And the not only the past, recent data, but the projections of what's happening in the future, and try to make educated decisions. Having gone through 2008, I know that, real estate encounters downturns and it's not always upward charging. So you got to be careful and you got to know how to navigate it.
In thinking about that and the market shifts, Does like timing the market play a role in your strategy?
Yes, it does. And I'm almost embarrassed to say that because people, the general consensus is don't try to time the market. You hear that all the time. I think I've been doing that since the beginning. And that was my just ignorant self. But I thought I mistimed the market when I bought. I bought in 2000. And the market had been charging upwards for 3 years. So I thought I had made a huge mistake when I bought that first duplex because I overpaid. I think it was listed for like $379,000, like $380,000. I paid $435,000 because there was a bidding war of like 15 other buyers. So I was terrified when I bought that first property. I thought the market had run its course and was probably going to go into a recession. But I had the good luck that it continued. I've just been, focused on trying to watch where the economy is going. When a market has been chugging upward for a very long time, like it had been in 2019, I get a lot more cautious. And I know, having gone through the 2008 recession, I started sitting on the sidelines in 2006 because I knew the market was overheated. I knew there were these bad loans everywhere and it was somehow going to end badly. And I waited until the market dropped, and it dropped by 15% in 2017. And I thought now is the time. And I bought a 16 unit building in LA, but I had jumped in a little bit early and the market continued downward. And, fortunately it was a workforce, like a B, C class property. And it fared the storm of 2008 pretty well. I mean, we didn't go down in rents and our occupancies held, but I was also, working full time at the time and making good money. And I was like, I am going to watch this market and wait until I want to find the bottom. And I read about it and I my conclusion was I wanted to see two consecutive quarters of GDP growth. And when I saw that, that would be an indicator that we were coming out of the recession. And that occurred there was a little bit of a double dip. It happened in 2011, then we went down a little bit, and then it went up for the long term starting in early 2012. And I was lucky to be watching it because I started buying aggressively in 2012. And it served me well. And that was me trying to time the market. And, you know, maybe it was luck, but I did it. And I think it's not that impossible to time the real estate market because real estate moves at a glacial pace. Unlike, you know, the stock market where you could buy or sell with the click of a button, real estate takes four or five months to close a deal. And it's, you know, it's really hard. So it just moves slowly. And I've found, or at least I like to think I've been able to time it because it moves so slow and you can get ahead of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. We talk about that often where it feels like an area is overhyped and then over the next 5 years, it continues to to get hyped, and you're like, oh, actually, there's a lot of time here to
it's
act.
Not too late,
right?
Yeah. So,
and you know,
or sorry, go on.
Just a thought on the reverse of that too is because I've been successful and kind of benefited from how slow it takes for a market to hit bottom and go upward. I've, like, for example, that 2008 property, I thought the market had gone down and it did go down by 15%, but it took a long time for the market to adjust for the real estate market to adjust to the recession. And I think I'm more inclined to make the mistake of buying prematurely when I think we've hit bottom. And I think that might be happening right now. I think I hear a lot of investors say, oh, real estate has fared pretty well and multifamily has fared pretty well during this pandemic. You know, we might be out of the woods, but I'm kind of skeptical about that. I think, you know, in the U.S., we've had this stimulus that are all these different factors. And I think, I don't think we've seen the worst of it yet.
So I'm curious, how has COVID-19 and the situation that we're in 2020 affected your portfolio? And it sounds like you're sitting on the sidelines right now and taking a wait and see approach.
A little bit, yes. I keep thinking that I'm not going to do anything, but I'm always looking at properties, and you know, every once in a while something catches my eye, and I think like this has enough of a discount to weather volatility. But yes, I am sitting a little bit on the mark on the sidelines. I'm watching carefully. My portfolio, to answer your question, has done pretty well, like better than I expected, but it has been impacted. I've seen, you know, an uptick in delinquencies and vacancies, and all the properties are surviving. We're weathering it. But if it continues to go down, you know, it could become more challenging. And then at the same time, I'm looking at a property right now that I just bought two properties. I bought a distressed property, and then I bought another property that the rents were pretty low in LA. It was a 22 unit building that I knew there was enough of a cushion that, you know, if rents go down, those rents won't be impacted because it's rent controlled and they're well enough below market.
Right. That doesn't sound like sitting on the sidelines at all.
No.
Also, I just bought two doors.
Like, just bought two and looking at a big property in Austin right now. But I'm trying to be very picky and very cautious and ready to walk away. You know, I don't need a deal.
Right.
That's, I think, emotionally, I want to detach myself. Like, now is not a time to be, you know, going all out. Like, wait, watch. And if you find distressed properties that, you know, are an incredible opportunity, and you do the math and you put things in place where you can survive upcoming volatility, then yeah, I'll buy if it meets those criteria.
It's so clear to me, Mark, how passionate you are about real estate. And I know like how active you are in the market and kind of always monitoring. What advice do you have for younger people kind of considering getting into the market? Maybe that writer who's got their first gig.
Yes, I would tell, and I have told lots of writers that are starting out, like if you get a chunk of money, if you get on a show or you sell a script and you get a chunk of money, there's nothing better that you can do with that than to buy a property and ideally buy a house hack, like get into a duplex or a fourplex or a threeplex or even a single family and rent it out. Keep your expenses rock bottom. You know, if you're in the entertainment business, you know, you got to be ready for any kind of curveballs that your career throws you. So keep your expenses very low. And yeah, there's nothing better than that house hack as your first foray into real estate. It's a chance for you to operate a property. You'll probably live for free, if not immediately, eventually. And yeah, you get the benefit. You get a lot of benefits from it. You get reducing your own expenses and then investing in something that you can grow wealth from and build your experience.
And Mark, for those listeners of ours who are kind of unclear on what house hacking means, can you kind of unpack that a bit?
Sure. Yeah. I'd never heard the term house hack until maybe like 2014 or something. But house hack is what I did. It's the first property I bought was a duplex. And a house hack is something that you can live in and also rent out. So just any kind of property. It could be a single family house where you're reducing your costs of living and also making income by renting it. And then you have the ability to fix up the property. You could add value to it. And over time, you know, the rents should head upward. And also there's a lot of favorable loans and favorable programs for that first time buyer. You know, you could put a much lower down payment and there's other programs that help you. So I think it's a no-brainer if you ask me what is the best way for a new investor to start out. You know, I wouldn't say invest with me because I want you to be an investor on me. I would tell them to go do it themselves and get that learning experience.
Absolutely. And we're seeing a lot of people now just because of the price points in our marketplace. They're doing that with two-bedroom condos now where they're renting out the second bedroom or in pre-pandemic days, doing Airbnb for the second bedroom if the building permits, you know. So really, really sound advice. Maybe as a final question, Mark, we talk a lot about mindset and kind of just how people stay. Like it's a real process, finding deals, monitoring markets, staying on top of things. And then also a lot of people fall victim to, analysis paralysis when they're monitoring the market. And, you know, a year or two goes by and you haven't bought anything. So how has mindset played a role in your investing strategy?
I think it's huge. I think I learned mindset getting into the entertainment industry. And I started being fascinated with mindset even as a kid. But you know, trying to get into entertainment industry, like I kind of learned that if you're chasing a big dream, you're gonna meet big resistance. And, you know, the going's not just going to get tough. It's going to stay tough for a long, long time. And maybe that's the biggest part of it is everyone has passion at the outset and, you know, for a good amount of time. But can you hang in there when you're past the point where you expected to have found success? And can you still be passionate about it? I think it's developing that mindset of determination and persistence. And then on the passion side, there's a funny thing about real estate. I think it takes passion, but it also, because it's an investment, it takes being dispassionate. So you should be passionate about your commitment to growing and working the process. Be passionate about the process of looking at deals and practicing real estate, but be dispassionate about decision making. Don't get married or don't get emotional about, oh, I really want that first deal, so I have to have it in the next 6 months. Or in the reverse of that is don't get scared. Don't get intimidated by it. You just have to have your criteria, define your criteria. I think that will help you overcome analysis paralysis. Is if you had a strict set of like, all right, I'm looking for a 5 cap. And, you know, every market is different. So some people will be like, a 5 cap, are you crazy? But, you know, I would look for, my criteria is I look for a 5 cap, which gives me leverage. I look for $250 a square foot, which tells me I'm buying that asset just on the physical asset. I'm buying it well discounted compared to everything else out there. And then, you know, check your boxes. You know, box number 3, can I add value? And is there room in the rents to increase? And then get a list of value adds. We have a list that's maybe has like 30 different value add plays, and I break them down into which phases of ownership I do them in. There's certain things I do as soon as I take over a property. There's certain things I do by month 3. There's certain things I do 6 months in and 12 months in. You know, when you have a long list of ways that you could add value, it gives you a lot of tools to make an investment a success, regardless of what is happening in the economy.
And maybe just as a final question, Mark, like it seems like you're in like the idea of properties as a business and your approach. And I know you've been doing this for so long, but it seems like you live in two totally separate worlds, like the creative writing world and the entertainment world. And then you're so kind of deeply embedded in the business world, really. Like one thing that strikes me is it seems like you kind of were talking to a broker one day and you kind of fell into this almost by accident. Like growing up or as a young kind of aspiring writer, did you ever think you'd be controlling a multi-million dollar real estate business?
No, not really. You know, like I said, my dream was to be a writer. I was a head in the clouds type kid. But, you know, I guess I did. I remember growing up driving to high school, and I went to high school kind of halfway across town in Cleveland, Ohio. And there was a lot of like abandoned buildings, and I would always drive past them, and they kind of had that, they were old buildings. And I just would look out the window and be like, oh man, that'd be such a cool building. I had this feel and this attraction to these physical structures and architecture. And I was like, that'd be so, I could do something cool with that abandoned building and renovate it and revitalize this block or whatever. I guess that's the only thing I can remember, being drawn to architecture and buildings and stuff like that. But no, I was always fixated on writing and comedy. But I did have that experience, and in retrospect, in hindsight, in many of the hardest parts of my life, the trauma of being broke in New York, you know, created an engine within me, and I found the answer. You know, I found real estate. Basically, when I came out of that first duplex deal, I had decided that writing was my dream, but real estate was my must. Is I had to do this and build a financial future. And I would do, I was committed. I'm like, I'm going to do this until I'm 100. You know, I'll retire from the writing, you know, whenever that happens, but I'm going to invest in real estate. It's something that I'm able to do until I'm 100, and I've met 100-year-old investors and they're my idols.
Don't ever underestimate the fear of being broke.
Yeah, no kidding.
kidding. Yeah.
And I love that. I love that idea of the driving around looking at old buildings, because we've actually talked about this. I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the show, but sometimes I feel like, you know, you see people that want to collect, you know, hockey cards or comic books or beautiful cars. And I have none of that, but I do feel like properties when you drive around, like I know, you know, half of the houses in Vancouver just because I've sat and stared at them. So it's almost like that's a,
right,
you know, and wished I owned
them. That's your hobby.
Yeah, exactly. It almost becomes, yeah. It's strange the way that works, but.
Yeah, I loved how I had, when I started out, I had like a 401k at some of my first early jobs. And it was kind of dull and boring, and it would make like 5% a year. And it was nothing that got me excited. So my eye was drawn to, you know, what else can I buy? Like, what can I get? Can I get a nice car? But all of that evaporated as soon as I had that first experience with how powerful real estate was. I didn't want anything. I had no other hobbies I was going to put money towards. I was going to put everything towards real estate.
That's great. Before we let you go, and I know you're a really busy guy, but we have these five quick questions that we always end the show with. Can you hang around with that for that?
Okay.
Okay, perfect. Sure. So we're going to do the LA version. So favorite neighborhood in LA?
Favorite neighborhood right now, either Koreatown or Westlake.
Great. Favorite bar or restaurant?
Favorite bar or restaurant. You know what my favorite restaurant is, and it's been closed for 4 months, and it's a chain, but it's a place it's called Larchmont Village, close to where I live, where I have three little girls, and I take them there, and we get our breakfast on Saturday and Sunday morning. So it's Le Pain Quotidien.
Right.
And they're so nice. Everyone there is so nice, and it's just a great place to go to on the weekends.
You think a guy's busy and then he mentions in passing that he has three kids.
I'm doing something wrong here.
What is one book that you'd recommend to our listeners?
One book. I don't know if I have one book. I could tell you a recent book that I read that I liked. It was called The Art of Performance by Joran de Flander, that it kind of straddles it. I guess it applies to real estate and writing. It was just that, you know, this guy has just broken down, you know, the top performers, and whether it's all talent or whether you can develop, you know, elite skill in any area. And it kind of is proven over and over again that you can develop it. And it almost argues that talent is a myth.
Wow. Interesting. It's kind of like the 10,000 hours idea.
It's exactly that. And it just has all these case studies of, like, there was this guy, and I hadn't heard of, I guess he was kind of well known, but he proclaimed that he was going to have a kid, and he was going to be a world chess champion before he was even married. And he went out and did exactly that. Wow. His son became like one of the best chess players ever. And it was just, he wanted to demonstrate that elite skill can be taught. It's not the myth that you have this magical talent or not.
Wow. Yeah. Great. Great.
That is a great, I'm going to read that. What is one piece of advice that you'd give your 18-year-old self?
My 18-year-old self, I think it would be, you know, I want to say get into real estate sooner, because when I was 18, you know, I hadn't thought about real estate. You know what I would tell my 18-year-old self? Because I did get into real estate as soon as I had money. I didn't have money before that. I was broke. But what I would tell my 18-year-old self is, as you're going through, you know, your liberal arts education and learning Latin and all these things, you know, step aside and on your own time, because they don't really teach it in schools, teach yourself about finances and personal finances and how all that stuff works. Because obviously, as you guys know, it has such a huge impact on your life. And I don't know why they don't put more of a focus on it in schools.
Right. Yeah, we both come out of the liberal arts, and I feel like we, in certain respects, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, but we've had similar trajectories in that, in kind of coming to real estate a little bit later, and yeah, that's great advice.
But we all know how to do a footnote.
My footnote
Chicago style
are impeccable. Ask me about footnoting. I have a special question, but what is, this is the last of our five wire questions. What is something that you have bought in the last year or two for under $1,000 that has changed your life, or at least improved your life in a meaningful way?
What is something that I've bought for under $1,000? That's something I've changed my life in a meaningful way. Changed my life. I think it was adopting apps has been, a changer, an iPhone. I guess that's not under $1,000. No, are they? Yeah. What do iPhones cost?
Probably in the States. They're like $4,000 or $5,000 in Canada, but in the States, they're
$715,000.
No, I'm just kidding. I think they're about $2,000 in Canada. an iPhone. A lot of people say AirPods. I don't know if you're an adopter of AirPods.
Oh, AirPods.
That's
yeah. I do. My wife gave me some AirPods for the holidays, and I looked at them kind of curiously when she did, and I was like, I don't really need these, but then I wear them. I'm wearing them right now.
Yeah. Right. I lost mine 2 days ago, and I'm going through a crazy withdrawal right now.
I know, it's maddening. I can't hold a phone to my ear anymore.
Right.
It's too awkward.
And as a final question, just you're the only guy we've had on the show, I think, that lives and works in Hollywood. You mentioned that you're writing a script with Seth MacFarlane right now. Is there somebody you've met in your career, like the, not necessarily the biggest star, but like a person that just floored you being in the business here?
There's a couple of them that have kind of come out of the blue. And it wasn't really like, I wasn't like a Hollywood obsessed kid growing up. I always thought Hollywood seemed ridiculous. In the no-nonsense Midwest, Hollywood just seemed absolutely ridiculous. But I loved meeting Ricky Gervais. I'm a big fan of the Office, the British Office,
right,
as well as the American Office. But, I ran into him at the Emmys, and he came up to a couple of us writers, and he was gushing about how much he loved Family Guy. And I was like, oh my, are you kidding me? Like, he watches the show I write for. That was really cool. I don't know. Met Johnny Depp, and obviously work with Mila Kunis, and I hope most of them are like this. Is I like, to meet celebrities and find out that they're down to earth, that they're not taking all this celebrity stuff too seriously.
Right, and asking you about for real estate advice.
right.
Excellent. Well, Mark, how can people find out more about what you're up to, and then also more about Quantum Capital? And I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to find out more about you.
Sure. You can reach out to me at quantumcapitalinc.com. That's just Quantum Capital with an INC at the end. I think that's our website. That's where you could connect with us. And you can also reach out to me at mark@quantumcapitalinc.com, which is the email address.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was a great conversation. I think our listeners are going to learn a lot. So appreciate your time.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Adam and Matt. It was great talking to you guys.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Mark Henteman, executive producer on Family Guy, script writer, show writer, real estate mogul.
Fan favorite.
Fan favorite. Father. I mean, this guy wears many hats and he does them all well. That
I'm
was a
huge
great
fan.
Episode.
I'm a huge fan of Mark.
Nice guy, too. Nice guy.
Super nice guy. I mean, he's a very, very successful guy, a huge get for the podcast. And we've been looking forward to this episode for a while. We booked this about a month ago or so, and we're so glad we got him and really generous with his time.
Like, no
I think
kidding.
We ran long today for sure.
Yeah, well, no, generous with his time. And one other thing I was thinking about, I mean, a lot of the most successful real estate investors we speak to on this show, and Mark is no exception, have established a series of criteria that they're
right.
looking for, right?
Right.
And it's the easiest way to just go through, does it work? Does it fit? Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And then I think that's the first step to really focusing in on neighborhoods and making sure you're getting properties you want when you don't have a lot of time.
That's it. And you know what, Mike? The best part about this conversation, in my opinion, was it's just someone that he's like, when I got money, I just went out and I bought something. Like I got to a certain point and I was just – then I would buy something. And it's just this like – it kind of – kind of reminds me a little bit of the conversation that we had with Michael Zuber, where it's just like one door at a time,
yeah.
right? Like it doesn't have to be complicated. Like what we're doing here is not rocket science.
Yeah, he has a system in place, but it's not like something that most people cannot do.
Exactly, exactly. It's just it's monitoring the market. It's understanding what you want to buy. It's understanding which market you want to be in, and then it's acting continuously in a way that's disciplined and orderly.
With purpose. That's Mark Henteman for sure. Great conversation. What else do we have today, Adam?
We have so much, Matt. We have obviously the Sellers Club. It's the newest club in town. Sign up for the best resources for sellers to sell for the top dollar.
That's right. And these
top dollar in the shortest amount of time.
These are actionable plans with checklists.
Yeah.
Many, like, many
it's
checklists.
Steps. Like it's steps.
And like the sold plan, right?
Yeah.
Like
start on launch date.
Start on launch date. This is a work yourself towards the launch date. Lays it out in very clear terms. You won't be disappointed. This is an exclusive club that's growing. Sign up at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And Matt, I should say right now, if you are interested in listing your property, we can run a comparative market analysis for you, tell you exactly what your home's worth, and put together a pricing strategy and a plan. Because really, these plans that we're putting out there, they're based on our own internal systems.
That's right.
As a top producing team in Vancouver.
And you might want to consider reaching out sooner and later because the fall market is about to hit. We are headed into Labor Day in about
yes.
a week and a half here. And after that it's go time.
It is go time. It's go time, Matt. I've never heard you say that before, but that's it seems out of character. It seems like it's like when you told everyone at the house the other day to raise the roof. It
just didn't, yeah, didn't, I know. Didn't I've fit. Only said banger twice in my life.
Yeah.
Both times.
Both
on the
times
podcast.
On this, both times recorded for eternity for your daughter to hear.
Matt, Dad was really interested.
He was really
into
cool.
calling stuff bangers and thumpers. Yeah.
Anyway, it's go time. It is go time yeah. after the long
the
weekend.
The daddest
for
man
sure.
in the world. The daddest. Anyways, yeah, it's go time here on the podcast.
But okay, what
level
else?
Up.
All right, so we got the sellers.
Whoop, there it is. Okay. Anyways, we
back to our regular scheduled programming.
Yeah,
we got the seller's guide. We also got many more resources over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We do
things like the Live Wire. This is our weekly newsletter with deal of the month. So much. Jammed with information.
Yes.
We have stats that go out very soon after they're released by the real estate board, but also stats kind of that get granular that the real estate board does not produce. We
right.
send those out to everyone on the live wire. We also have private client services.
We do, Matt. And if you are not using PCS to search for real estate in Vancouver, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's available on our site, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And I'm running out of breath on account of being some bones in a puddle of BMI fat.
Does the BMI have to go before the fat? I don't understand.
I don't know, but you know what? You're making some changes.
I am.
We all like to. We all like to hear it. I feel like we've heard about this on the podcast before.
Are you suggesting that we have body complexes? I get every once in a while we get somebody who shouts out how don't take advice from the Scalina brothers.
I feel like we've been doing unless this for 5 years, and I feel like we have the same. It's a reoccurring conversation here.
Yes, we've shifted to being a body positive podcast.
That's right. Absolutely. If you want to talk about body positivity.
No.
Or real estate or anything else, really. Give me a call, 778-847-2854 or Matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also have that secret line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And speaking of body positivity, I'm pretty sure he's done at least 10 days in a row now of 410 calories on the elliptical on my fitness pal.
Unbelievable. I can't wait to see.
He's making some changes.
He is. He's saving his joints too. That's the big thing, is best joints in the game. And he sells them for $5 a pop.
All right, have a good week, guys.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.